It would mean to me that the world would know who we are as a people. When they're flying into Seattle or into Vancouver, they would know that they're coming to Salish territory.
Welcome back to the Nature Stories podcast. I'm Samantha Brown. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Each week, we bring you pieces about the intersection of people and place. This week, a piece about the bodies of water that run from south of Seattle to north of Vancouver and out to the Pacific Ocean, and a movement to rename it all the Salish Sea, a name which honors the area's original inhabitants. Here's The Sound in the Sea, produced by Paolo Pietro Paolo.
This is the sound of where I live. I live on the shores of the Strait of Georgia. Beyond that is Vancouver Island, and beyond that, the Pacific Ocean. When I try and describe the beauty of this place, words often fail me. This is another sound from here, but it's not heard much anymore. It's a language called Halkominum. It's one of the Coast Salish group of languages. The Coast Salish peoples live around the inland waters that stretch from just north of Campbell River in BC to just south of Seattle in the state of Washington. Right now, those waters are known by a number of names: the Strait of Georgia, the Strait of Juan de Fuca, and Puget Sound. When I heard there was a proposal to call it all the Salish Sea, it got me thinking about the power of sounds and the power of names, of history and ecology and politics, and of where and what people call home.
Salish Sea at the Nahim at Stoats Art.
Well, we're looking at a map here, and you can see the Salish Sea. That bit of sea in between the crumpled island and the edge of North America is the Salish Sea.
The interaction of the Strait of Georgia with Puget Sound and the interaction of those two body waters with the Strait of Juan de Fuca clearly indicate that there is this larger unit that does not have a name. To me, it's appropriate to call it a sea.
Those are three different bodies of water, and you can't refer to them all as the same thing. They're in different countries. They have different geographical features. I can't imagine how this makes any sense.
As colonists, we should pay some respect to the people that surrounded and lived in the sea.
We are the Salish people.
Salish Sea.
It would be good to have the name Salish Sea to be used in our waters off our territories.
At least if there was even a child 100 years down the line asked the question, why is it a sea and who are the Salish? That would seem to me the best reason.
It completes our history.
The idea for the name of the Salish Sea might have had a poetic beginning, a tribute to the First Nations, or maybe a more prosaic start at a negotiation table somewhere. But it turns out that the origins of the idea are scientific. So tell me where we're going here.
Well, Ruckles Park, Salt Spring Island.
I think we can get down to the water here.
Like down here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bert Weber is a marine biologist, and he's the man who came up with the idea of the Salish Sea in the first place.
I was born in Vancouver, actually in New Westminster, but I live in Bellingham. So I feel like I've had a chance to see the Salish Sea from both sides. And I think probably my mixed background in part is responsible for me seeing that the political boundary doesn't separate the north and south parts of what I call the Salish Sea.
Bert is tall, and his skin is tanned and weathered by the life he's chosen. He's a scientist who's devoted his career to the study of estuaries, bodies of water where rivers like the Fraser empty out into the salty sea, where you have a mix of salty and fresh, a blend, a coexistence of two different kinds of water.
Seeing if there was a shore crab there. Estuaries are very rich in biological life, and that's the case. That's like that seal that's watching us, wondering what we're doing. Yes, but it's that basic interaction between river and sea that makes this a unique place.
What kind of seal is it?
Harbor seal. It's probably wondering, yeah, what kind of organism we might be. Worrying whether it's a threat, whether we're going to point a stick at it and shoot at it. It is gone now.
Bert is in love with this landscape. It's one he's known and studied for his whole life, and it's one he wants to protect with a new name, the Salish Sea.
One of the turning points was in the early 1970s. I was at a meeting of people who were interested and concerned about oil pollution because we were about to receive tankers from Alaska with Alaska crude oil. And I remember the Department of Ecology talked at length about northern Puget Sound. Near the end of the meeting, this tugboat captain got up and said, "Where is northern Puget Sound?" He said, "I've been on these waters for 35 years, and I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know of any place called northern Puget Sound." And I remember that, and it got me sensitized to the meaning of names and the importance of names.
I looked at a map. It's true. On any map, it's hard to see where the Strait of Georgia ends and where Puget Sound begins. It's like there's a large patch of blue that's kind of nameless.
Whether you're in Seattle or Olympia, Comox or Campbell River, Port Townsend or Victoria, the surface water is all a little bit diluted. And most of that water comes from the Fraser River. So we're tied together physically. The science was clear that waters from Georgia Strait made their way down into Puget Sound. And waters from both Puget Sound and Georgia Strait exited out through the Strait of Juan de Fuca. There's just no question in my mind that this was a functioning ecosystem.
A functioning ecosystem. And that sounds like something out of a textbook. But he's right. When I first moved to the West Coast, I almost couldn't believe the richness of nature all around. You can go for a walk and spot a seal or a heron on any given day. It's easy to lose time gazing into a tide pool and counting the starfish and the anemones.
You've got good shoes on, don't you?
Yeah.
This is all gary oak and little rocky outcrops, and it's kind of the land of the alligator lizard.
This is Bryony Penn. She's a geographer and an artist, and something of a romantic, I think, about the place that she lives in. And today, she's taking me on a tour of her family's property on Salt Spring Island. It's a small paradise in the Strait of Georgia.
Virtually everything now, these are all endangered ecosystems, these rocky outcrops. It's one of the most endangered ecosystems in the whole of Canada. It's so delicate, it's so rare, it is so beautiful. It needs every single tool at its disposal to educate people about how to live well in this place. So that's a pretty characteristic noise, is walking through the slough. And the funny thing about it is that they order this from all across North America to stick in their floral arrangements. And we just have it here. But yet, when people move here, they mow it all down and stick up some bloody Kentucky bluegrass.
There are very few places in the world where you get large areas of the coastline against the ocean protected from the open ocean. That to me is one of the very special things about this landscape. I love the tranquility of these inland waters.
Douglas fir, arbutus, open savannas, hot dry summers, warm mild winters.
They are a playpen. Just a wonderful playpen with visual beauty wherever you look.
People want big views, so they mow down all the forest in front of their large houses, or we're loving this place to death.
When I first moved to Vancouver, I had one of those incredible views everybody covets. From our apartment window, we could watch the sun set over the water behind the mountains of Vancouver Island.
When you drive anywhere in the city, looking north, you'll see the towering mountains, and looking anywhere west, you'll see the ocean, and it reminds you of how peaceful and fun it is out there, and you'll want to get on a boat pretty quick, so I went and bought, what boat I could.
Keith Roy loves this place as much as anyone. He lives in Vancouver, and the water is part of his life.
I am an avid kayaker, and you will often find me in my kayak on English Bay, paddling out around Stanley Park, looking over across the Strait of Georgia to Vancouver Island.
A kayaker and a member of the Monarchist League of Canada.
Just draw a straight line down the coast between Vancouver Island and the mainland. It is an aptly named body of water. By any mariner standard, it is a strait. By any account, that is not a sea. We might as well call it a puddle or a pond.
Like a lot of people, Keith really cares about names and exactly what they mean.
The term Salish Sea is relatively new, but I can tell you where the name Strait of Georgia appeared, because we kept records.
Keith has a copy of one of those records handy, the diary of Captain George Vancouver.
It was actually named on the birthday of King George III, His Majesty King George III. On Monday the 4th of June, 1792, we've already named the body of water. It's been named in honor of an individual who funded and instigated an expedition to the area. Let's stick with what we have. We were able to provide for them and a double allowance of grog to drink the king's health, it being the anniversary of His Majesty's birth. So they basically just had this drunken, food-filled party on the boat, on which auspicious day I had long since designed to take formal possession of all the countries we had lately been employed in exploring. The name was born out of that, in the name of and for His Britannic Majesty, his heirs and successors, in honor of King George III. You would have to change every map in the world, and every globe, and every child's room, and every country, and every corner of the earth has the Strait of Georgia on it, because that's what it is.
Now, the Salish Sea proposal is a proposal to add the name, and not change any names that already exist. Nothing would get deleted. But Keith, and even some of my friends whom I told about this, really care about the history behind the name Strait of Georgia. For them, there's no reason to mess with what's already there. As Keith says,
there is, to my understanding, no common name for that body of water among the native population historically. So the Strait of Georgia is the first time that body has ever been named.
Then there's this argument. Critics of the name Salish Sea point out that it's a name that a white man came up with, using a word, Salish, that was bestowed upon the Coast Salish peoples by white linguists. To these critics, at best, it's misplaced political correctness. So I asked Bert, the man who started all of this, why he chose the word Salish in particular.
Well, the Salish people were here first. They've interacted with these marine resources first. They've always had an incredibly high priority in their culture, the maintenance of the natural resources. My hope is that we will be better able to manage these natural resources by adopting a name. It's totally appropriate that the name reflect the indigenous peoples of this area.
Yeah, but Salish wasn't even the name they originally gave to themselves.
The Salish people now acknowledge, they recognize themselves as a Salish origin. So it's a term that is reflective of their culture.
We are the Salish people.
They don't seem to have any problem at all of adopting the Salish name as a name for this body of water.
Muxweit, Muxtukwo Salish.
They have, in fact, done so. They've named the Salish Sea. They use that, Salish Sea, as part of their culture now.
Salish Sea at the Nahim at Stoats Art.
George Harris is a member of the Shemanis First Nation.
Hulkulitsa.
That's his name in his language, Hulkuminum.
When I go to the sea, I think about my ancestors, my grandfathers that have gone, grandmothers that have gone. The state of the seas were very, very important to them. The well-being of the seas were a high priority for them. It would mean to me that the world would know who we are as a people. When they're flying into Seattle or into Vancouver, they would know that they're coming to Salish territory. They would know Salish Sea is part of who we are as a people. I'm very passionate about that. I want the world to know who we are. It completes our history in the land. It completes our history and ties as indigenous people to our land.
You see these old stumps. There's probably been two passes of trees taken out. First, when the first settlers came, sort of 1880s.
Bryony Penn, the artist, she's also a geographer from the University of Victoria. She can't trace her family back as far as George can, but she certainly has deeper roots here than most British Columbians. She is, in fact, a direct descendant of the people who colonized this land.
Then the second pass was during the war. About everywhere on the island got nuked because they were looking for lumber for the war effort. And you can see these are all old growth Douglas fir across the way. And this was an area that just my grandfather and great-grandfather never wanted touched. And it's just as it was when they stole it. I mean, you know what? My great-great-grandparents took this land away. I still sit here and go, how could we have been so arrogant just to arrive somewhere and not be curious about what the people who've lived here forever have to say about it?
I mean, it's not as if we're asking people to discard the Strait of Georgia and Juan de Fuca and that component of our history. What we're saying is, let's embrace our colonial history and our indigenous history. Why can't we acknowledge both?
What's interesting about the name Salish Sea is that if it's accepted formally, it will be a name that reflects compromise and coexistence, a name that crosses boundaries and crosses cultural lines. It will have taken the cooperation of two countries, a state, a province, the First Nations, and scientists, all unlikely bedfellows. But for Keith, the name is too much.
The Strait of Georgia is a very active international waterway. The number of ships and trade that occur through Vancouver and across that waterway is astounding. You've got British Columbia ferries going back and forth, train car after train car filled with grain unloading onto ships, the commercial boats, the big tanker ships. It's a busy place. Let's stick with what we have.
But the activity on the water and on the shores of this sea or strait or sound or whatever you want to call it, all of that activity has taken a toll on the water's health.
Degradation of our ocean bottoms and shores and the sea life depleting.
A whole lot of different bird populations are disappearing. It looks really, really bad.
Very few salmon return to our streams now.
There's just less life.
There used to be a commercial run of coho in Georgia Strait in my lifetime, and I fished them commercially with my dad. They're gone. Can't do that anymore.
We went out and got what we needed. Nowadays, it takes great effort to achieve that same harvest, and I only have stories to tell my children now. They can never, and they will never experience that, what I experienced, because the resources are no longer there.
The whole water would be boiling with this frenzied activity of herring. And then you'd get like screaming gulls. And then coming in after the herring would be the big Chinook. And then you'd get orcas coming in after the Chinook. There's just less life. So we don't have any herring anymore.
They're gone. All those things are gone.
Very few salmon return to our streams now.
We haven't been looking after this Salish Sea and treating it as a toilet bowl, I think.
That's the part that burdens my heart, because we've lost so much. I only have stories to tell my children now.
Will the name help us help the land heal? I hope so. From a scientist's point of view, it's absolutely important to know what it is, the system is, that you're working with. As a kid, I used to sit on the beach at White Rock and look out over the ocean and see the islands, and it seemed to me that there was an infinite distance between where I was and just that first island that I could see, which was Orcas Island, just a few miles away. That sense that things are so big means they're limitless and surely we can't hurt them. But that's not true. It's finite. It has limits. It has boundaries. And to have a sense that there are limits, there are boundaries, and to understand what those limits and boundaries are, I think will help us understand that we have limited resources. They're not limitless. It's imperative, if you want to save the organisms of the Salish Sea, to have some framework, to have some understanding of how it works. That's why understanding it as an ecosystem is primarily important. And once you have something, once something exists, biologists want to name them. So it has to have a name.
This is the lifeblood of the Salish Sea. These freshwater creeks are what bring all the nutrients, and that's what makes it such a rich sea, is this mix of the fresh and the salty. This creek's named after my grandfather, by my great-grandmother. They lived on a village site called Quananach, So I call it Monte Creek / Winunich. Depending on what I'm feeling like.
I grew up by Lake Ontario. I'm Ontarian, I'm Canadian, I'm Italian-Canadian. Now I'm even British Columbian. I guess at any given time I'm any or all of these things, depending on what I'm feeling like. When I think about it, I realize that I've never had a problem using multiple names to get across what I'm about. Each name has its own layer of meanings. Each name is part of a home. Maybe that's why, to me, the Salish Sea name rings true. It would add a new layer to the names that already are used, and they would exist together, just like the salty and fresh water of Burt's estuaries, just like the two countries on either side of the 49th parallel, or the First Nations and those of us who came later, and just like the fragile natural environment and the 8 million or so people who live within it. There's a whole lot of coexisting going on. Maybe having more than one name for any given place isn't such a strange idea.
Welcome to the shores of the Salish Sea. This beach here is the beach of the Chaminas Mestimo, our people of the land, indigenous people of our land, and this is the Salish Sea. We're standing on the shores of our beach, the Salish Sea.
To hear more pieces like this one, visit the Public Radio Exchange at prx.org. Support for this podcast comes from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life, online at nature.org/stories. If you have thoughts or feedback, write to us at podcast@tnc.org. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.